Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This week's stories were told live at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was Undertow. Here's today's host, a teacher, author, and storyteller from Connecticut, Matthew Diggs.
I'm walking across an open field at a YMCA camp just a few autumns ago. I'm walking alongside one of my fifth grade students. We're walking in the direction of the big green slide. The boy walking next to me, his name is Jake, and he's counting. He's counting incessantly. Jake counts because Jake has autism. And when Jake is nervous or excited or afraid, he counts as a way to sort of control those feelings. And right now, he's feeling all of those feelings. Jake is walking in the direction of the big green slide, and Jake does not want to go on the big green slide. If you were in my classroom and you saw Jake, you wouldn't realize right away that he has autism. He presents pretty typical. The way Jake's autism manifests primarily is in his inflexibility. Jake does not do anything that Jake does not want to do. If he's in the bathroom and he decides that there's something bad in the hallway, no amount of human intervention can get him to come out of the bathroom until he is ready to come out. If Jake latches onto a doorknob and for whatever reason he decides he should cling to that doorknob for a very long time, you will never pry his fingers off that doorknob until he is ready to come off the doorknob. It's like a superpower, to be honest with you. It is a will that I have never seen before. It is strength and power, which often gets in the way, but it is incredible. And Jake does not want to go on that big green slide. Jake doesn't realize that the person walking next to him is just as inflexible as he is. I don't have autism, I'm just an asshole. And when I decide I want something, I do it. If someone asks me to dress formally for an occasion, I will either dress incredibly inappropriately, or I will dress appropriately but make everyone in my vicinity miserable for the duration of the night. When my wife Alicia asks me if I'd like to try her new cherry macchiato Whole Foods organic artisanal ice cream, my answer is always no. I have spent 47 years finding 6 flavors that I like, and that's as flexible as I can be. I cannot add a 7th flavor. This is just the way I am. And I have decided that on this day, Jake is going to go down the big green slide. It is one of those moments where an irresistible force is hitting an immovable object, and I am going to win. Now, because Jake has this superpower, these superpowers always come with sort of problems as well, and Jake has some. One of the problems is he doesn't pick up on social cues. And so as we're walking to the big green slide and Jake is counting, he says, "I don't want to go on the big green slide." And I say, "I know, Jake, we're just going to go look at the big green slide." A typical kid at this point understands exactly what's happening and turns and walks in the opposite direction. Jake doesn't see that I am leading him to his destruction. His autism is preventing him from picking up on that social cue. So we approach the big green slide, and if I'm being honest, it's not really a big green slide. The big green slide is a 75-foot-long green tube that runs the length of a hill at a 30-degree angle. It is a serious piece of business. The first time I went down the big green slide, I was terrified. And when children go down it, they scream, and their screams echo all over the camp. And there's like a 20-foot runway at the bottom, which is sometimes not long enough. So you reach the end of the runway, and you just tumble over on the grass. Like, it is a real thing, and it's justified that he is afraid of this thing, but he's going down it. And if I'm really being honest, I don't want him to go down because I'm an asshole and because I'm inflexible, although there is a little bit of that. The truth is, I'm worried about regret. I grew up in a family where my parents took a very aggressive disinterest in my life. I often thought of us as private contractors. Like, we all were in separate sections of the house. We came together for meals, but then retired to our corners. My parents were the opposite of helicopter parents. They were the Hubble Space Telescope of parents. Like, positioned as far away as humanly possible and always facing in the opposite direction. They were drop-off parents, which is to say, we will drop you off somewhere, but you gotta find a ride home. And that was about what I got. And as a result, there were many moments in my childhood where I needed a parent to tell me to do something, or maybe say, you should do something, or say, you will do it, damn it. And every time, there was no one there behind me. The first time I went to try out for Little League, my stepfather dropped me off in the parking lot and said, find a ride home. And as I walked across the parking lot, I heard the ping of the ball off the aluminum bat. And my thought was, I've never made a ping that loud before. I can't hit the ball. And then I looked at the field and I saw boys throwing the ball from first to third with like velocity and accuracy that I didn't think I was capable of achieving. And I'm a left-handed person. And because my stepfather didn't want to buy me a glove, he gave me a hand-me-down glove, which was a right-handed glove. So I was walking into a sport that I was going to have to play with the wrong hand. And so as I walked across this parking lot, I decided I can't try out for Little League. And so when I got to the table with the big man checking us all in, he asked me my name and I told him, but then I said, but I can't try out today, I hurt my knee. And he looked at me for a moment and then he said, okay. I can't say okay to Jake when he tells me he can't go down the big green slide. I don't want him to experience the regret that I have for so much of my childhood. And so we reach the slide and we climb the steps up to the top to the line, because there's always a line at the big green slide. And we get in that line and we begin moving forward. And I tell Jake, we're just going to look down that slide so you can see what it looks like to go down that slide. And then we'll just step away. And we go down, and I got the kids around me who have been down it before, and I've got them chattering now, telling him how amazing it is. And we get one person away from the slide when I use a trick that a mother taught me once. I say to Jake, oh no, Jake, if we don't go down the big green slide because we've been in line so long, I think the man is going to be mad at us. There is no man. But this mom taught me once that if you tell kids that the man is going to be mad, they react. And I didn't believe it when she told me, but I've done it to my children, and it is 100% true. Like, if they won't leave a restaurant, you can just say, listen, I'm leaving, and the man is going to be mad. And they're up. That's it. They're done. And when I say the man to Jake, he starts to move. There's a 16-year-old girl sitting in a little chair next to the slide. She's, I guess, the man today. And she's the one sort of nodding when it's okay to go down. And before I give Jake even a moment to think about it, I put my hand on his shoulder and I lower him down onto the slide and I say, don't worry, Jake, I'm going down with you and everything's gonna be fine. And I wrap my legs around him and I wrap my arms around him and I say, Jake, we're gonna go down the slide and it's gonna be perfectly fine. And I look to the 16-year-old girl and she nods and then I push Jake down the big green slide. And right away, I know I've made a terrible decision because he screams, and it's not a happy scream, and it's one word, why? And my heart sinks, and I go to jump down the slide to follow him because Jake has autism, and that means if he's triggered at the bottom of the slide, he could run to the forest, he could run to the lake, he could run anywhere, and I'm gonna lose him. And as I go to get down, the 16-year-old girl in the chair says, you can't go yet, he's not at the bottom. And somehow now she is the man, because the 47-year-old man is listening to the 16-year-old girl who's telling him not to go, so I'm sitting there waiting for the girl to tell me that I can go. And when she says, go, I fly down the slide as fast as I can. And when I get to the bottom, my fears are realized because I don't see Jake anywhere. And I look to the tree line, and I look to the pond, and I look to the wiffle ball court, and he is nowhere to be found. And I stand up to ask another teacher to help me, and that's when I see Jake. He's holding the hand of a boy, and they are running back up the stairs to go down the big green slide again. Jake is a counter, and so that weekend he counts every time he goes down the slide. 79 times. It's basically the only thing he does that weekend. And I worried that I had pushed a kid too hard, too far, too quickly, as I am known to do sometimes. But Jake went down the big green slide 79 times that weekend, and he was as happy as could be. Thank you.
Matthew Dix is an internationally best-selling author, and when he isn't writing, Matthew fills his time as an elementary school teacher, a professional storyteller, a wedding DJ, a minister, a blogger, and a life coach. Matthew is a 36-time Moth Story Slam champion and 6-time Grand Slam champion, who's been featured on the Moth Radio Hour and This American Life. He's the co-founder and artistic director of Speak Up, a Hartford-based storytelling organization. Matthew lives in Connecticut with his wife and 2 children. He grew up in the small town of Blackstone, Massachusetts, where he made a name for himself by dying twice before the age of 18 and becoming the first student in his high school to be suspended for inciting a riot upon himself. If you've never heard someone ask themselves their own questions, get ready. It's kind of funny. We're going to learn more about our host here on Soundbites.
All right. So what is my connection to Maine? You know, I don't really have very much of a connection to Maine, if I'm being honest. I wore my Yankees hat tonight just because I knew that there were more Red Sox fans in Maine than Yankees fans, and that's the kind of irritant that I am. I will say that when we went to celebrate our 10th anniversary, my wife and I chose Maine as the place to come. So we came here to Maine. I actually had pneumonia that weekend and kept it a secret from her so that she could enjoy her anniversary weekend, and then I ended up very sick the week after. But it was a lovely weekend in Maine, and I've spent many a weekends here enjoying myself. So it's a lovely place. How did I get into storytelling? My friends began listening to the Moths podcast back in 2009. They told me that I have had the worst life of anyone they know, so I should go to New York and tell stories. And I agreed without any intention of ever actually going, and they continued to exert pressure until I finally said, I will tell one story one time and never do it again. And that was 7 years ago, and I have told stories all over the world now, actually. So little did I know what they were getting me into. What is my process for preparing to tell a story? I don't write my stories out. I think because I'm a novelist, I don't like to apply the pen to the paper when it comes to my own personal voice. So I do everything orally. I primarily work in the shower and while I am driving my car. And I used to tell my dog stories before she passed away. So I've actually lost an opportunity to work on stories, but primarily in the shower or in the car, I speak it out loud until I'm happy with a portion, and then I record that until I have what I think is a good version. Although, because I don't write it down, nothing is ever really memorized. It's just sort of remembered, so you never know what's going to happen on stage. And then tell us about one part of the story, a behind-the-scenes detail that's not included in my story tonight. And if I had wanted to extend the story, I could talk about telling that beautiful moment to his parents and their reaction, which is a gift that teachers have, where we get to tell parents about the moments that they miss with their children, because we get to spend sometimes more time with them during the school day than they actually spend with their children after school. So it was a wonderful moment that doesn't really belong in the story, but was something that I will remember forever.
Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to Toad & Co. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, is online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org.